Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, hey, you're listening to Eat Your Words on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kathy Irway. So we've heard a lot about how wheat is causing, for many people, all sorts of stomach ailments or general stomach discomfort. But what about wheat's effects on the brain? My guest today is a board-certified neurologist. He is the president of Perlmutter Healthcare Center in Florida and also the Perlmutter Brain Foundation and a fellow of the American College of Nutrition. And he is the author of a new book called Green Brain, The Surprising Truth About Wheat, Carbs, and Sugar, Your Brain's Silent Killers. Dr. David Perlmutter, who's on the line right now. How are you?
Well, couldn't be better. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. And now, I must admit that I had a bowl of granola this morning, so I might not be operating
at
my...
You could be.
Yes, exactly, full capacity of intellectually. No, but you write in this really fascinating book how it's not only wheat, I should clarify, but it is carbohydrates, and that includes whole grains, even fruits, and basically the sugars from carbohydrates. Is that correct?
That's right. And it turns out that it's all carbs. You know, whenever you even mildly elevate your blood sugar, that becomes a significant and basically a toxic event for the human being. I mean, even after this book was published, articles have continued to come out that have been very, very supportive. In August of 2013, a wonderful report was put out by the New England Journal of Medicine that demonstrated that even blood levels of like 105 and 110 are dramatically associated with risk for dementia. Now, you know, these are blood levels that your doctor is probably going to say, hey, don't worry about it. You're not diabetic. Everything's cool. But at the end of the day, what they found was a dramatic increased risk for developing dementia. And, you know, there's no treatment for that problem. There is no treatment for dementia. And yet, here is just more research showing us that our food choices and the effects our food choices have on blood sugar dramatically associate with risk for becoming demented. And that's pretty important, especially for the families of the 5.4 million Americans who have Alzheimer's right now. I mean, you know, they want to know what they can be doing so they don't end up like mom or dad. And I think that might be one of the main reasons that Grain Brain has become such a sensation, because there are a lot of us out there, and I say us because I'm in that boat. My dad has Alzheimer's disease.
Yes, and you note in the introduction that Alzheimer's is becoming, you know, more and more of basically an epidemic of today. If you may, I wanted to quote from the intro where you write that there is little doubt that one of the largest and most wide-reaching events in the ultimate decline of brain health in modern society has been the introduction of wheat grain into the human diet. While it's true that our Neolithic ancestors consumed minuscule amounts of this grain, what we now call wheat bears little resemblance to the wild einkorn variety that our forebears consumed on rare occasions. So you seem to be implying that our brain's health has been steadily declining.
Well, it's not that I'm implying that. I'm stating that because it's true. As a matter of fact, you know, there is evidence that over the past several thousand years, the size of the human brain has actually now started to decline by as much as 10%. So when we have things like Alzheimer's affecting 50% of Americans age 85 or older, we've got to take notice of that very, very powerful statistic and recognize that this is a preventable disease, as recently published in the journal Lancet Neurology by researchers out at University of California, San Francisco. We can prevent a disease in most cases for which there is no treatment, and yet, you know, no one's talking about it. So you know, that's what motivated me to write this book. And I have to say, the response has been huge, because I think this is an area that people are very, very concerned with, and you know, as evidenced by what's happened to the book.
And I just wanted to clarify, because I completely understand how our wheat has changed from the ancient variety, as you mentioned here, and it really was different to introduce so much wheat into our diet in modern times. But what about carbohydrates found in whole grains, like oats or barley?
Very good question, Kathy. And the bottom line is, carbohydrates, no matter where they come from, whether they come from you know, organic oats that were grown on an ashram and blessed by monks, or you know, honey that's derived from bees that meditate 3 hours a day, it's all carbs.
Right.
And carbs are toxic to the brain. So whether you're getting your carbs from whole grain bread or from a candy bar, it doesn't matter. The body doesn't tell any difference. Carbohydrates specifically are toxic. So we rate the danger of foods in terms of just their carbohydrates by using what is called the glycemic index.
Mm-hmm.
It rates not just how rapidly and how high your blood sugar goes after you consume a certain food, but also takes into account how long the blood sugar remains elevated. Obviously, the longer the blood sugar remains elevated, the more detrimental it is for your health. And, you know, your listeners may be surprised to know that one of the highest glycemic index foods there is whole grain bread. It's got a higher glycemic index than white bread, a higher glycemic index than pure table sugar, and almost twice the glycemic index of a Snickers bar. So that's the reality of the situation. It doesn't matter whether it's organic, wonderful, whole grain goodness. It's exactly the wrong food for brain health, inflammation in general, and that includes cancer risk and even heart health.
So that's basically carbs. We're looking at carbs.
Even carbs from fruit.
Right.
Now, does that mean you couldn't have a handful of blueberries each morning? No, of course you can. Have an apple a day. That's perfectly reasonable. But the notion of having 6 to 8 servings of pure carbohydrate fruit in a single day, it makes no sense. You know, there are a lot of sources of hidden carbohydrates that people don't talk about. For example, you know, no one's going to start their day with a can of cola, or most people won't, because that seems unreasonable.
I would hope not.
Yeah, but, I mean, what's a better choice? What do most people have as a beverage at breakfast?
Coffee.
Coffee and a glass of juice, a glass of wonderful, fresh-squeezed orange juice. But you've got to understand that that 12-ounce glass of orange juice has about 36 grams of carbohydrate. That's already 9 teaspoons of sugar before your croissant, bagel, and whole grain cereal have even arrived.
Everything's carbs.
Everything that we like is carbs. I mean, the reason we like carbs is because they are sweet. And we like sweet because it told our forebears that the fruit was ripe. We ate fruit when it was ripe because it had the highest level of phytonutrients. And beyond that, the sugar in the fruit that we would consume in the late summer and early fall, when fruit would be ripe, triggered our bodies to make insulin. And when you trigger insulin, your body lays down a layer of protective fat. By eating carbohydrates, it turns on the mechanism by which we store fat. And that was great, because that allowed us to survive through the winter, and that's why we're here today. The downside is, that's why we all have a sweet tooth. Mm. Everybody has a sweet tooth, because it allowed our survival. Now people are pounding the carbohydrates 365 days a year for the winter that never comes.
So, and I've heard this this stated many times, especially by like the recent paleo diet enthusiasts, but there is evidence that points to when humans began consuming meat, how it basically influenced their brain size. It grew their humans' brains.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, there's clear evidence of that. That the whole event of tracking animals and killing animals and eating them, it likely is responsible not just for the dramatic leap that we experience in terms of brain size, but also paved the way for socialization, the coordination that was needed between hunters to make the kill. And some even credit our carnivorous ways in the past for the development of language.
Mm.
Now, I want to be really clear, because the purpose of Grain Brain is not to tell everybody they should go out and start eating tons of meat each day and dairy products.
So it's not to endorse any certain diet like paleo or otherwise?
Oh, it's absolutely not to endorse a diet in every way, shape, and form. And the dietary recommendations in Grain Brain are very specific.
I guess I meant not one already established,
Exactly. I mean, the main premise is we've got to cut back on carbohydrates and reintroduce fat to the dining table. But be sure, we're talking about good fats, the olive oil, avocado, nuts, seeds. If you choose to eat meat, it should be grass-fed beef, wild fish. Those are the sources of fat that your body is absolutely desperate for. When you deprive the body of fat, then you will, by default, increase your consumption of carbohydrates, and that's like having a coffin nail. That's exactly the worst thing you need to be doing.
I just wanted to back up a little bit here, and I'm curious about how you got started on this research. Was there any particular discovery or observation that made you want to investigate it more?
I've always been sort of a nonconformist, I guess. At least that's what I'm told. Mm-hmm. But that said, you know, as 20 years ago, as a practicing neurologist, I really became kind of disenchanted in the recognition that really all we did as neurologists, and it continues to this day, is pretty well wrote prescriptions to treat symptoms.
Okay.
And I became less desirous of treating the smoke and wanted to start to focus on the fire.
Prevention.
What's going on here? Let's prevent these neurologic conditions, and I realized that, my goodness, there is plenty of science out there. I mean, we used over 251 scientific references to write Grain Brain. It's been there for a long, long time, and yet, you know, we're kind of led to believe that the only way to be healthy is to take this or that pharmaceutical. Well, again, something happened when the public became aware of this book to the extent that, you know, the week it was published, it went on the New York Times bestseller list and has never left. I mean, it's been on for 16 consecutive weeks because people have wanted this information for a long, long time. Now they're getting it, they're reading it, and what's so wonderfully rewarding is people are making these lifestyle changes, changing what they eat, and finding that, you know, a lot of their problems mentally are reversible.
It sounds like a lot of connecting the dots. And congratulations also to the book's success. I just want to cut to a quick little brief musical interlude, and we'll be right back chatting about lots more.
Okay.
Everybody gets broke down. You're listening to Broke Down by the California Honey Drops, and this is Eat Your Words on heritageradionetwork.org. We'll be right back. Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Seeing a need to help people sort through all the misinformation about healthy eating, Whole Foods Market added a seventh core value: to promote the health of our stakeholders through healthy eating education. In our stores, we give you the tools you need for choosing the most nutritious foods and healthy recipes, as well as offering classes with nutritionists and cooking coaches to help inspire good health and well-being. Stop by your local store today and learn more about our Health Starts Here program and wellness clubs, or online at wholefoodsmarket.com/healthstartshere.
All right, we're back chatting with Dr. David Perlmutter, author of Grain Brain, The Surprising Truth About Wheat, Carbs, and Sugar, Your Brain's Silent Killers. Thank you so much again. And just to jump right back into it, you know, we talked a little bit about the evolutionary, effects of either meat or grain on brain health. But what about what you can do within your lifetime, so to prevent later epidemics like Alzheimer's or dementia? Can I actually, like, in my own time, change and affect my own?
Oh, yes. I mean, this is a program that works for 90-year-olds, and this is a program that...
So it's not too late. It's never too late.
Oh, it's never too late. I mean, who knew that your brain... I'm not picking on you in particular, but a person's brain continues to grow new brain cells your entire lifetime. You know, back when I was in medical school, we weren't told that. We were told, hey, you've got your 100 billion brain cells, and then that's it. If you drink a beer, you lose 20,000 brain cells, or however many it was. But the point is, this process called neurogenesis, growing new brain cells, occurs throughout your lifetime, and it specifically occurs in the brain part called the hippocampus, the brain's memory center, can regenerate. And what is so empowering is that you have control over that process based upon turning on specific genes that code for a chemical by the name of BDNF. You can actually make changes right now to stimulate the growth of new brain cells. And that includes getting aerobic exercise on a daily basis and cutting back on carbs, eating more fat, and actually adding in more what's called DHA, a nutritional supplement, omega-3, or to eat, you know, get it by eating fish. But those things, aerobic exercise, lower carbohydrates, DHA, turn on the gene. They change your genetic destiny to allow you to grow new brain cells, and that is very exciting information. You know, it absolutely flies in the face of all the things I was taught, you know, back in the day when I was in medical school.
It just keeps on evolving, it sounds like.
Well, that's a good thing. Yeah. Change is really good because, you know, we're heading down the wrong road, so it's time that we suddenly realize that and turn around and go back in the other direction and then try it again, because what's going on right now in healthcare as it relates to brain health is taking us nowhere. We're making no progress, and it's really time that we focus on disease prevention because, you know, this is a $200 billion a year experience in just dealing with Alzheimer's. That's twice what we spend on dealing with heart disease. It's all about making simple, doable lifestyle changes today, changing your diet, getting some exercise, making sure you're sleeping well. And these are the fundamentals of grain brain. And again, people are grabbing on to this and saying, oh, my goodness, had I only known, I would have done it sooner.
Absolutely. And with regards to preventing or decreasing the number of cases of Alzheimer's, dementia, and other degenerative brain conditions, is there a study? Has there been studies done to link specific diet changes with regards to?
Yes, as a matter of fact, published in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease, January of 2012. It's available online. The Mayo Clinic demonstrated in a study of dietary patterns that those individuals favoring a high carbohydrate diet had about an 89% increased risk of developing dementia, whereas, here's the intervention, those individuals who consumed more dietary fat, their risk was actually reduced by 44%. I mean, we all respect the Mayo Clinic, and here it is, a peer-reviewed journal dedicated to Alzheimer's, published, and yet, who talks about it?
Right.
We need to talk about this stuff. It's not the stuff you'll see in a commercial on the evening news, because no one can own this. So, you know, this is about knowledge and empowerment.
And I have to ask this question because, it's really important to focus on major diseases of the brain, but does changing your diet actually make you a little bit smarter just in everyday life?
I think there's really no question in my mind, based upon the results that we see in my medical practice on a daily basis, that children improve in school, that 90-year-olds can regain function, become able to dress themselves, maybe even drive a car again. In Grain Brain, I have a wonderful story of an elderly woman who, in fact, had exactly that happen. Now, to be sure, this is not a cure for Alzheimer's disease and will not help every person that walks in the door or every person who reads this book and adopts this program. But if it helps 1%, that's better than any drug that's out there. So 1% of 5.4 million people, that's a lot of people and a lot of families and a lot of loved ones who are otherwise going to be very, very distraught about a certain situation.
So what kind of foods should we actually be eating all the time? Because carbs are so prevalent. You know, it's in fruits and juice and vegetables. And
so we don't eat much fruit, and we certainly don't drink fruit juice, but we eat lots and lots of above-ground vegetables, kale, broccoli, cauliflower, all those beautiful above-ground, colorful.
Not potatoes, though, right?
No, but, you know, some below-ground vegetables, a small degree.
Radish.
Small levels of radishes, carrots, potatoes, onions are certainly allowed. They just have to be factored in. And then wild fish, wild salmon, mahi, nuts and seeds, avocado, wild free-range chicken, eggs, a wonderful, healthful food for your heart and for your brain. Eggs, whole eggs, including the yolk, couldn't be better for your brain, couldn't be better for your heart. So we've really got to get past this notion that somehow consuming dietary cholesterol is a bad thing. Nothing is further from reality, and nothing is further from where we are in terms of scientific literature today. And that is, again, eating foods that contain cholesterol is nothing short of miraculously good for you.
Hmm. So it sounds like if you have a sweet tooth, you're out of luck here, because sugars are really, that's the flavor, or that's the taste.
Well,
I guess,
we all have a sweet tooth. Yeah. You have a sweet tooth. I don't know you that well, but I'm sure you do.
I
have a sweet tooth. We all do.
Okay, right.
But, I mean, it's part of humanity. That's, again, what told us to eat the ripened fruit, caused our bodies to make fat in the late summer, allowed us to survive through the winter, and that's why we're here today, is because we have that sweet tooth. But we have to exercise our frontal lobes now, in other words, our ability to understand what in the heck's going on around us, and override this primitive instinct to eat carbs and eat high sugar-containing foods all day.
Right. It just sounds like, you know, maybe to deflect from eating fruits, it seems... I know that this book focuses mostly on wheat because mm-hmm. that is a huge source of carbohydrates.
As is fruit.
Okay, all right. It just seems that fruit has so many other benefits to it.
And
smaller amounts of carbs.
We can get those benefits from eating low-carb vegetables.
Okay.
What are the benefits of fruit? Well, fiber, carotenoids, vitamin C, wonderful things that you will get by eating vegetables as well. Now, again, have a handful of blueberries each day. Eat an apple each day. Nothing wrong with that. But when you have the 4 to 6 servings of carbohydrates from fruit that contain high levels of fructose, fruit sugar, then you're changing the playing field. Our Paleolithic ancestors didn't suddenly come upon an apple orchard. So to be clear, I'm not saying we shouldn't have fruit, but this needs to be significantly reduced in our dietary consumption.
It's fascinating, really, because, it sounds like it's, you know, a lot of meat, vegetables, seafood, eggs, as you noted, it sounds like very similar to paleo diet. Is that?
Well, it is. It's actually very similar to paleo diet. We do allow some degree of legumes, which are kind of off limits on the paleo diet. But that said, when you consume legumes, when you consume beans, etc., you've really got to, again, take into consideration that these are oftentimes fairly concentrated sources of carbohydrate. Now, the fiber in legumes is certainly an upside, but the phytic acid that they contain that binds your minerals and takes them out of circulation, you don't absorb them because of beans, is something also to be considered.
Mm-hmm.
But in many ways, there are quite a few similarities between what I'm recommending and the paleo diet.
Okay, just something
day,
to kind of wrap your head around and be able to identify, you know, more easily, like what
sure.
has carbs and doesn't, you know.
Well, you know, that's why there are an abundance of recipes at the end of Grain Brain, and
mm-hmm.
I'm just putting the final touches on the recipe book that will be coming out in the fall. But
that's exciting.
I want people to eat lots of wonderful food, eat food all day long and be full and be happy and enjoy life. But you're not going to enjoy life when you become diabetic, when you become obese, when you develop cancer, and when you develop coronary artery disease and even dementia as a consequence of pounding your physiology with high-carbohydrate foods. And, you know, it's even beyond the wheat. It's even beyond the gluten.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing magical and safe about shopping the gluten-free aisle of the grocery store. The gluten-free breads
still
and
has
pastas
carbs.
And pizzas.
Right.
You're right. Still very dangerous sources of carbohydrate and got to be avoided.
Now, don't you think there's a danger, though, with stressing a high meat, high cholesterol diet with so much meat replacing, you know, whatever, you know, just to make you feel full? Because I can't imagine.
A great comment. And again, I'm not saying. We need to relegate the meat and the animal products as to become the side dish. And that most of the plate is filled with nutrient-dense above-ground vegetables. Again, the kale, broccoli, spinach, Brussels sprouts, cauliflower, etc. If you choose to have meat, it's got to be grass-fed. When we read books like Colin Campbell's The China Study that talk about oh, the dangerous effects of eating a lot of meat, he's absolutely correct. Because
yeah,
the meat,
because
by
we
and
also
large,
have a heart,
eat.
Yeah, heart disease
and
epidemic.
Heart disease and
yeah.
cancer, yes. But it's related to not the fact that people are eating meat. It's related to the type
the
of
bad
meat that 95% of people are consuming. And this is meat from animals that have been fed high levels of grain that's been genetically modified. So you're pounding these animals with high-carb diets. They're developing high levels of inflammation-producing omega-6 fats. And it's no surprise that we see books like The China Connection where the China study, where people are having problems from eating lots of meat. Number one, the grain vein program is not high on meat. It's 4 to 6 ounces a day. Number two, it's got to be grass-fed or wild, not farm-raised fish, or free-range chicken or free-range eggs. So it's not a go-out-and-kill-an-animal or an eat-slabs-of-bacon kind of approach.
This is not a free-for-all, just an excuse to eat a lot.
Not a free-for-all. No, it's not Thanksgiving every day. You're right.
So, but you also say that legumes, which are often plant-based, protein-rich foods, but they're also they're carb-heavy too.
Exactly,
I mean, beans.
Right.
I mean,
so
but
again,
that's allowed.
You've
got to
look at your carb. You've got to sit down and go through the foods that you're eating. Who knew? Pay attention to what's on the end of your fork, and get some kind of sense as to your daily carbohydrate ingestion. And we recommend keeping daily carbs to about 60 to 80 grams per day. Now, that's not a draconian recommendation. We can all do it, but it is certainly a far cry from the 150 grams a day that people are so readily consuming. And again, it's about recognizing these hidden sources of carbohydrates that Americans are so oblivious to. But, you know, I have to say, this book, again, was published in September and is now being published in 15 countries around the world, because it's not just here in America that this turns out to be an important message. It's across the world. Rates of diabetes and dementia and heart disease are skyrocketing worldwide because of this incredible influx of carbs into the human diet.
Well, congratulations. It really is a fascinating work, and we're looking forward to the cookbook that's coming out to complement it.
Well, me too.
Absolutely. And that's about all the time we have for today, but also best of luck with your father and his Alzheimer's condition, and to your own. Look forward to hearing how the Green Brain Diet, how it changes everyone's outlook who tries it.
Great. So. Well, I appreciate that.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Perlmutter, and thanks everyone at Heritage. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.